Welcome to The Culture Chat, a monthly podcast hosted by WorkXO, exploring topics related to company culture and the future of work. WorkXO was founded by Charlie Judy, Jamie Natter, and me, Maddie Grant, and our mission is to upgrade work. You can find out more about WorkXO and our unique workplace genome assessment process at workxo.com. And now, over to our host for today.
All right, hello and welcome everybody to the preview of this Thursday's Culture Chat, where we're going to be talking about creating cultures that work in the millennial era. I'm Jamie Natter with WorkXO. I am here with my partner in crime, Charlie Judy. Say hi, Charlie.
Hi, everybody.
And we have a couple of guests today to talk to us about this topic. From an organization called IQ Solutions, if I got that right, John Bobosh.
Hello.
And Rich, are you there too?
Yes, I'm here.
Awesome. So you guys, if you could just start like just telling us a little bit about yourselves and your organization, and then we'll sort of jump into the questions.
Sure. So I am a project manager on sort of web projects at IQ Solutions. And IQ Solutions itself is a company that's been around for 23 years. We have 250 employees, and we're a communication firm, and we mostly focus on health-related topics. And most of our clients are government agencies or nonprofits, again, in that health education and awareness sector. Rich, I'll turn it over to you to talk more about yourself for a second.
I'm the VP of our digital products group here at IQ Solutions, and I've been here going on 15 years, and it's been quite a journey going through and starting off in the kind of the age of the younger new employee and kind of going through the process through the years of getting to this point. So we got a good group, and the company's grown a lot, and I'm really passionate about the area that we practice in, so that's a lot of fun.
Cool. Well, I do want to talk a little bit about millennials. I know that you all have read the book When Millennials Take Over, or at least heard us talk about it because you invited us up there for a book club meeting you had about that topic. We obviously think that adapting to this millennial era is an important thing, but tell us, if you can, just a little bit about your culture and like what you're doing internally to stay relevant in this day and age.
Sure. So I think we do a lot of different things. And I think one of the things that helps drive that is that we're really open to new ideas, which leads us to, again, trying new things. We pilot a lot of different programs and tools to see if they'll help us work better and more efficiently. We kind of don't shy away from new ideas. The organization is very flat, so we're encouraging people to share their ideas, and then we encourage them to implement them and come up with pilots. We collect a lot of feedback from our team to see how we can work better together. I think one of the things that I think we've been doing very well is we have a management group that meets once a week to talk about big picture ideas for improving our processes and the culture as well. And then we try to come up with actionable items to solve some of these problems. And one of the things, an example of that right now, we're working on creating this mentorship program, which allows or some flexibility for the mentees. So if they have a specific career track that they want to go down, we want to give them some guidance. But if they have things that they really want to learn about and become experts in, we want to support that as long as there's sort of an application to our work for those kind of things. Rich, do you have anything you wanted to add to what we're doing?
Yeah. So as an organization, we really do, as John mentioned, flatten it, but really allow everybody to have a voice and participate. So people are given lots of different options and ways to share their information, work with others, collaborate. We have another area we call knowledge circles, where we're coming up with the big picture solutions, problems that the company faces, and then looking at asking team members to participate in solving those problems. So the organization as a whole is very open to continuous improvement. We also had done the StrengthFinder exercise from the Gallup organization, which I think really helped galvanize a lot of how we work organizationally. we're leveraging that kind of the strength of people and positioning them in a position to apply their strength and grow, and not asking them to do things that aren't really where they want to be. So, you know, working with the team members to find out what it is they want and really giving them the opportunities to pursue them are really, I think, what the company works toward.
Cool.
And hey guys,
Charlie,
this is.
Go ahead, Charlie.
Yeah, I was just gonna. I started to get all excited, John, when you mentioned the open to new ideas things, which I think leads to so much about culture and certainly is crucial to the millennial space. I wonder if you can just kind of, either of you can just kind of expand upon that a little bit, because I think lots of organizations say that they're open to new ideas. And very few, or at least not as many who say they're open to it, are actually really good at being open to new ideas. They may ultimately get to a new idea, but there's a huge process that you got to kind of go through before you can get there. You got to slam it through the traditional hierarchy or approval process or whatever. Talk a little bit about kind of what context you had to put into place or what environment you had to create, or, you know, what you did with people who aren't necessarily as prone or as accepting of new ideas. I mean, tell us a little bit about kind of how you enveloped all of that.
So I think there's no short answer to that question. I think I'm trying to think of a good example here. So we work on the tech side of things. So we're constantly trying new programs and tools. So specifically in that respect, you know, it's very easy for us to sort of implement something without having to do a culture change across the entire organization. And I think that's what makes our group really flexible. So one of the things that we had started tinkering with was Slack, and it had a very organic growth. A lot of people just saw the value to it. So I think when we try to sell a new concept or idea, we're trying to show other people what the value is and how it will benefit them, typically. And we encourage people to just use things. I think we always will have some people that are change averse, and we just do our best to help bring them along. Sometimes it's fighting the good fight, and sometimes I think they're forced to come with us whether they want to or not.
Yeah.
I mean, just to build on that, I mean, we do pilot a lot of different applications and just try them out, see if they're applicable within one project oftentimes. And the ones that gain traction, the other people, you know, get turned on to, and it starts to grow, as John mentioned, organically. And then there, you know, what we do is when we do find something that is of interest that we want to start spreading out, is we start really running trainings. But there's other people in other groups within the company that we try to begin to work with first. So those are our, you know, we become our champions on the other sides of the groups.
Yeah.
That's what we try to do, is work with them, win them over, and then it begins to become a little bit more of just part of the process.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea of the kind of, I think we refer to it, Jamie, a little bit like beta testing. I mean, you know, you put a bunch of stuff out there and you let people kick the tires on it, and, you know, you're not only testing the right approach, but you're getting buy-in as you're doing it. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Although I want to channel some of my other clients, actually, and ask you a question, because I get this all the time, particularly when I talk about sort of the internal capacity for innovation, which is something that we care about and we're talking about here, and experimentation. You know, it's like Charlie said, I talk to people, they're like, oh, yes, we love experimentation and innovation. I'm like, okay, well, then how much time are you giving people to experiment? They're like, oh, well, we can't give them any time because they're too busy. You know, they're full up. Like, we're 100% capacity. We don't have time to do this. And then I tell them, okay, well, then you're not going to have innovation. So my question is, like, how do you guys find the time, or how do you enable the people inside your organization to find the time to take this approach? Because that's often a pushback that I see when I talk to people about it.
Well, that's a really good question. And John, you mind if I answer?
Yeah, go ahead.
I think it starts with the hiring process, Jamie, from the original, when you bring people in. When we go to hire people, we're looking for those characteristics that where people don't just settle for the norm, and they're looking to try and challenge essentially the status quo. So we definitely like that. And then, you know, the energy that these people, you know, team members bring, you know, we'll find ways to do that. You know, sometimes it's just right in the middle of a project. Sometimes it's on their own time, just exploring at night and trying to get things forward. But a lot of times it does start with a project that might have the right people in place that are ready to try something new.
To build on what Rich said, I think that was – I was going to say something similar. Not to pat myself on the back, I am one of those people that won't settle for inefficiency. So I will take the extra step to try to figure out a solution for something. And sometimes that is working a little bit extra. And I think just part of our culture, especially within the digital side of the house and the website, you know, we're constantly looking for ways to improve how we code things and things like that. So we're used to people saying, hey, would you mind checking this out with me? And typically, we get the buy-in from people. We collect a lot of feedback, too. So I think that's part of our process is to say, what do you think about this? Do you like how this is going? Do you not like it? Why do you not like it? Those kind of things as well, too, so that we're constantly improving how things are being used as well. And that helps with the buy-in process for getting us to the next step or getting us using a tool.
Now, I know for a fact you guys have a decent number of millennials on staff. Are you seeing them sort of approaching leadership in management in new or different ways? I mean, are they bringing some new practices in with them?
So I'm a millennial, and I can tell you how I run my projects. And we have a few other millennials on the management staff, and I think some of them do a really good job. And I think it gets back to what Rich says, is there's a good bit of passion and interest in what we're doing. So it naturally comes to us to push forward in these endeavors to some degree. So I think one of our staff managers, he does a great job with trying to do team building things. And he goes the extra miles to make sure that his team is working well together. The team that he works with is sort of spread out. They all work remotely. They're all over the country, and he uses a bunch of different tools. Have you guys heard of PeopleSpark? I think it actually went out of business, but are you familiar with that concept? It's basically like short team surveys sent out once a week that people can fill out for a quick response. And it's more of an emotional check-in, like, how are you doing? How's the project workload? What's going well? What's not going well? How can I help? And he does check-ins with his team members weekly to see, you know, how is the project going? Because he's not always seeing them in person. And it helps with the communication of things, so we can tell if someone's doing well or if they're really frustrated with a project that they're on. And I've actually implemented that as well on my team, and I think it is a fantastic model. PeopleSpark went out of business. We're just using Google surveys now. We build a very simple one, and we send it out once a week to collect feedback. It really takes 10 minutes from each team member. And then we try to be really transparent with everything. I know, again, getting back to our team building manager, he is excellent at that, like explaining, you know, his situation on things, what's going on with the client, what he needs from them, where he's coming up short, how he needs them to step in and help him because they are subject matter experts. And then with me on my teams, the latest project that I was working on was a redesign for a nonprofit. And the model that I approached that I took was the lean UX model, which is essentially you're trying to get all your subject matter experts to work on every step of the project so that all that knowledge is baked into everything. So for example, we're having content editors and coders work with the UX team during the wireframe development to make sure that, you know, we're thinking about content and actually building things. And just so that, you know, the final product, the product that comes out of that phase is sort of ready to go right to the coders to start building things. And then we also integrate the client into that model as well, where the client participates in some of these feedback sessions. And I think there's a great deal of transparency there where they get to see, so this is the one thing in my neighborhood here, there's always sirens going by. So tell me if you can't hear me, if they get too loud. We're constantly trying to provide that transparency, is what I was saying. and by integrating the client into those meetings and getting their feedback. And it helps the subject matter experts hear what the client needs. And it creates a lot of buy-in with the client as well, because they see our processes and better understand how we're doing everything. I think it's really good for transparency. And then I also try to use new communication tools as well. I guess they're not that new. I know we were struggling with Google Hangouts earlier, but my client and I, we use that all the time to sort of see each other face to face. And again, since the team that I'm a part of works very disparately across the country, she gets to meet these people to some degree and see them face to face. And she told me she really, really likes that interaction with people because she gets to meet the team, and she wouldn't sort of otherwise have the same interaction with them if we were just on the phone. And then I'm going to turn it over to Rich, because I know I'm a little too closely engaged in being a millennial to say exactly how we're doing something different.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say the millennials bring a type of energy. And I think it's just with, you know, youth and empowering youth, you know, so giving them opportunities to try and experiment, to implement, to run with ideas and see where they go. So I would say that we do have that going on. We have, but I don't feel that it's just is limited to millennials. I feel like there's several people, Gen Xers, that are involved, and even boomers who do get, you know, very passionate about solving different types of problems and working toward them. A lot of time I feel that it's, you know, the millennials just bring that extra energy to the environment, which is always fun to see, and very passionate. So that's where I would say there's a bigger contribution. And then, you know, the more millennials, I think, in management will only help improve the organization overall.
Mm-hmm. So in... when millennials take over, we actually identified four key capacities. I've heard you guys actually talking about these a bunch already. Digital, clear, fluid, and fast. And the digital piece, I think, obviously, you guys are sort of in that space, but it's not just the technology piece. It's actually focusing on the user, customized experience. You know, you talked about the mentoring program. But, and a lot on clear, a lot on transparency. Are you guys doing anything around the fluid and fast? So that's like the creating a hierarchy that has some flexibility within it, and that means sort of trusting your employees to take action when they need to in order to sort of leap ahead. Those are sort of those two. I think those two are harder, so I'm curious if you guys are doing anything in that area.
Well, you know, my position is I'm new to my position. I was the director of user experience prior to this, and that's really my MO, what you're talking about, of the ability. I have several leads that report to me, but they have the ability to make decisions. I do not want to be a single point of failure. The idea is that they're not a single point of failure all the way down. And then really allowing, I think we were touching this a bit too, is that, you know, people at every layer have the ability to make decisions. Now, there's certain pieces where it comes through practice and understanding, and they can go to their manager or colleague and kind of help build their idea. But sometimes it gets down to making recommendations to a client and, you know, an idea A and idea B. And the ability for them to just say, okay, you know, these are my two ideas. What do you think? You know, we vet them internally and we work through them, but the giving them the ability to work on them is definitely something that we're big believers in and that we support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think an example of that is the book club that we invited you all to. That was just an idea, and I guess I'll take credit for it. And I brought the idea up to the management, and they were like, yeah, let's run with it. And they basically give me a very long leash to kind of do whatever I want to some degree in the book club.
So I have a general question. John, when you were kind of out there shopping, and I don't know if this is your first gig or your second gig or what, but how in tune were you with, you know, the kinds of things that you're describing, the behaviors, kind of the actions, just the, you know, just the values, the environment. Was that something that was important to you while you were kind of looking for the right place to hang your hat? Was it stuff that you took on faith? How did you even investigate whether those things existed in the organization?
I think it's been a couple of years since that happened. I can talk about my last gig too. So my previous job, I would say there wasn't a lot of flexibility. It was very hierarchical, top down. And I was looking for something that I thought better fit my needs, because I think they had a very prescriptive approach to career development. And, you know, I don't know, I don't want to get too far off into the weeds there, but I was looking for something a little bit different with a little more flexibility, and the ability to be more creative and apply a lot of what I learned. And I think some of the people that I talked to at IQ, as well as the projects that they were working on, it seemed like a really good opportunity for me to learn things. I think that was one of the most important things for me, was just to feel that I could provide something to the team and be a part of a team that I thought could help me grow professionally. I think those were the biggest things I was looking for. I don't think I knew that there were all these, that we had this level of flexibility within the company coming into it. But I do think it's something that we want to start promoting and talking about more in our job interviews when we're talking about people who are interested in coming to work with us.
Right. Interesting.
You know, to build on that, when it's part of my, when I'm interviewing and then and even during the hiring process, I always tell people IQ Solutions is a company where you are in charge of your career. We want to help guide you to where you want to go, but really, if you do well at what you're, you know, and passionate about what you're doing, we're going to keep letting you do that. You know, you can keep driving the direction of your future, basically, by just kind of keep embracing that, you know, that energy and focusing it. And, you know, we certainly support new ideas. The owners are great about investing in the team members and really supporting just growth, new, you know, and they're always open to ideas, which is great.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm really amazed, actually, that more organizations are not doing that. There's still this feeling inside mainstream organizations that if I do that, if I let my employees develop in ways that I can't predict, that's somehow going to be more inefficient. You know what I mean? Like, ooh, I can't control that, so it's not going to turn out well for the organization. But I'm assuming in your all's case that it's working out. Like, you're actually getting better performance out of the system by taking this approach, yes?
I think that's also something we're working on now. And I think in our discussions with us trying to solve that problem, you know, I think the prescriptive method of a career track of you need to do these five things creates a good deal of homogeny, and we want diversity in our skill sets so that we are better able to provide client services. If we're all sort of thinking and doing the same thing and our subject matter experts in one focus area, you know, that makes us very limited in our capacities. So that's why we're sort of encouraging people to explore their interests. Again, they sort of have to align with some business practice to some degree, and we support that. But we think that that is a very good approach, so that we, again, just have the ability to provide a wealth of different knowledge and opinions and viewpoints.
Cool. So believe it or not, 30 minutes has gone by. I'm always amazed at how quickly this goes. Charlie, any sort of last questions or anything else you wanted to get out there before we wrap it up?
No, I enjoyed both perspectives on the call. It's, you know, we could dig into any one of these things and spend another half hour on it. So I appreciate your kicking some, not only, you know, some interesting observations, but some things that people can probably sink their teeth into and think about in their own organization. Yeah. I mean, there's some actionable stuff that came in this conversation. So it's great.
Yeah, John and Rich, we really do appreciate you guys taking the time to help us set up this Twitter chat. I'm hoping if you're available Thursday, 1 o'clock Eastern, I believe, on Twitter at the hashtag Culture Chat, we are going to get into this fast and furious with some text, some of these same ideas. So we'd love for you to share it then too. So again, thanks for joining us, and We will see you next month on our Culture Chat preview.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. See you guys.
And that was the Culture Chat today. We'll have some highlights up on the blog soon. Find out more about WorkXO and how to map your workplace genome at workxo.com.